This is Audible.
PearPress presents On Becoming Baby Wise, Giving Your Infant the Gift of Nighttime Sleep by Robert Bucknam, M.D. and Gary Ezzo, M.A. Narrated by Exie Sands. Dedicated to Ashley Nicole, the first to call us Grammy and Grandpa. Foreword, written by Robert Bucknam, M.D., Louisville, Colorado. After completing medical school and serving my residency in obstetrics and gynecology, I felt knowledgeable enough to be a parent. Between my wife's degree in child development and my medical training, how hard could this parenting thing be? We would just do what comes naturally and follow our instincts, right? Wrong. Soon after the birth of our first son, we quickly found our enthusiasm and confidence turned into exhaustion and frustration. My wife was up 4 times at night, and my son was excessively fussy during the day. The unsolicited advice typically offered by colleagues was to feed more often, since it was assumed my son cried because he was hungry. We did feed him, around the clock, every 2 hours. As we found out later, that was the cause of the problem, not the cure. Scientists can put a man on the moon, but they cannot answer the most basic problems of early parenting. How to have a happy and contented baby who sleeps continually through the night like the rest of the family, and a mother who is not in a perpetual state of exhaustion. Through our common interest in children and parenting, my wife and I became acquainted with the work and accomplishments of Gary and Anne Marie Ezzo. The Ezzo's basic and loving concepts for nurturing newborns virtually eliminated the problems listed above, and many more. I have personally observed infants who were guided by the Ezzo's principles and those who were not. It became obvious that parents equipped with the right information do make a difference. That was one reason why, over 20 years ago, I made the transition from obstetrics to pediatrics. And with the switch came the medically sound principles of BabyWise. They work consistently, not only for millions of children already touched by the work of Gary and Anne Marie, but also for my 4 children, my colleagues' children, my friends' children, and all my patients. To say the least, BabyWise has brought a needed reformation to pediatric counsel given to new parents. When parents come in looking exhausted and discouraged and tell me their woeful stories of sleepless nights and fussy babies, I can give them a positive prescription that cures the problem. I hand them On Becoming BabyWise. Introduction. The principles of BabyWise were first shared in 1984. Sarah was the first baby girl raised with the principles. Kenny was the first boy. Both thrived on mother's milk and a basic routine, and both slept through the night by 7 weeks. It was that easy. From friend to friend, city to city, state to state, and country to country, the positive message continues to spread. Today, we no longer count the success stories in thousands or even in tens of thousands, but in millions of happy, healthy babies who were given the gift of nighttime sleep. As with previous editions, this update does not provide parents with a list of do's and don'ts. We wish parenting were that easy. Rather, our larger objective is to help prepare minds for the incredible task of raising a child. We believe the preparation of the mind is far more important than the preparation of the nursery. Your baby will not care if his head rests on designer sheets or beside Disney characters, nor is your success tied to his wardrobe or bedroom accessories, but rather to the beliefs and convictions that will eventually shape your parenting experience. It is our opinion that the achievements of healthy growth, contented babies, good naps, and playful wake times, as well as the gift of nighttime sleep, are too valuable to be left to chance. They need to be parent-directed and parent-managed. These are attainable conclusions because infants are born with the capacity to achieve these outcomes and, equally important, the need to achieve them. Our goal is to demonstrate how this is done, but only after we explain why it should be done. We realize there are a number of parenting theories being marketed today, most of which come gift-wrapped with unrealistic promises and unnecessary burdens. In light of the many options, how can new parents know what approach is best for their families? Since every philosophy of parenting has a corresponding outcome unique to that philosophy, we encourage new and expectant parents to consider, evaluate, and decide which approach is best for their families. This can be accomplished by observing the end results. Spend time with relatives and friends who follow the La Leche League attachment parenting style of infant care. Observe those who practice hyperscheduling, and certainly evaluate the outcomes associated with BabyWise. In which homes do you observe order, peace, and tranquility? Consider the marriages as well as the children. Is mom in a perpetual state of exhaustion? Is she nursing every 2 hours or less? Is dad sleeping on the couch? What is family life like when a child is 6, 12, and 18 months old? Is mom stressed, frustrated, or lacking confidence? Is the baby stressed, exhausted, or insecure? When the baby is 9 months old, can the parents leave the room without the baby falling apart emotionally? We believe the best evaluation of any parenting philosophy, including the one found in this book, is not found in the reasoning or the logic of the hypothesis, but in the end results. Let your eyes confirm what works and what does not. You will be most confident in your parenting when you see the desired results lived out in other families using the same approach. Look at the fruit, and then trace it back to its seed source. The appendices section of this book contains charts, worksheets, and additional information relating to infant care, all of which can be found at www.babywise.life/audiobook. Appendices of a book should never be considered less important than the general reading, but only of different importance. Please read them in the order in which they are referred to in the chapters. There are some matters of terminology that we would like to address. As you listen, you will hear that we predominantly used the masculine gender in our illustrations. This was done for our convenience. The principles will, of course, work equally well with girls. Also, in our attempt to speak directly to our community of parents, we often use the pronouns you, your, and yours to address our listeners. While we realize that not everyone reading this book is a parent, the vast majority are. Thus, we toggled between second and third person expressions. Finally, the name of the child most often referred to in this book is Baby. The principles contained within these pages can help parents develop workable strategies that meet the needs of their babies and the rest of the family. These have worked for millions of parents, and when faithfully applied, can work wonderfully for you. However, your pediatrician or family practitioner should always be consulted when questions arise about the health and welfare of your baby. Finally, please visit us at www.babywise.life for the latest medical support and read how the BabyWise principles gain global recognition through 20 languages and 6 million parents. Enjoy your journey of parenting. Chapter 1. Right Beginnings. Apart from the orphaned child, most people grow up in families in which, from birth onward, they learn a way of life that gives meaning to their very existence. For most of us, the word home carries more than just casual memories of a time and place where we spent our childhood. It was the first society from which we learned about life itself. It is within the confines of home that everyone first experiences the repertoire of human emotions and observes how others respond. We learn the meaning of sympathy, empathy, and caring. We absorb family and cultural values and measure our commitment to those values by how others respond to them. The home is where love is first defined by the care and attention we receive, and becomes the place where security is gained, lost, or possibly never obtained. The word home is so laden with significance that one cannot begin a conversation about baby care without first speaking to the persuasive influence that the home environment exerts, especially during the critical first year. From the first breath to the last day on earth, nothing will impact a person's life more than the influence a mom and dad bring to the home environment. That is because no other relationship in a child's life has greater and more lasting significance than that between parent and child. In the same way, no other relationship can test one's personality and resolve more than children can with their parents. What are the basic concerns of parenthood? What questions should expectant couples be asking, and what assumptions should they be embracing or shedding when it comes to preparing themselves for the lifelong commitment of parenthood? While we realize that parenting is very personal, we also know that there are certain assumptions about babies and baby care that can serve as powerful guides to achieve successful outcomes. Just as true, however, there are some assumptions we unashamedly will tell you to avoid if you are seeking to secure for your baby a firm physical, emotional, and neurologic foundation on which to build. The challenge. All too often, couples enter parenting hoping that an all-knowing sense of clarity will spontaneously emerge without having to put effort into learning parenting basics. Even with some classroom preparation, first-time parents are often shocked once the baby arrives by how much their lives change to accommodate the needs of their newborn. For mom, the challenge is physical and emotional. She can no longer rely on the in-utero relationship that took care of protecting and nurturing her baby. Now, specific infant needs must be matched with understanding of how best to satisfy those needs. It is a time when she becomes acquainted with all the new baby sounds that will suddenly trigger a variety of emotions never previously experienced. She will be struck by the compelling sensation to nurture, protect, and provide for her baby. It is also an adjustment time for dad, starting with the need to share his best friend, his wife, with his son or daughter. In essence, he is giving up something to gain more. Change also impacts mom and dad's free time. The time spent together before baby arrived needed less planning, but now nothing can be done spur of the moment without first asking, what about the baby? With a newborn in the home, life changes forever, and expectant parents should fully embrace what will become the new normal. However, this is where the challenge comes in. Some parents assume optimistically that life will not change drastically with a newborn in the home. That is not true. But neither is the opposite extreme that expects the tranquility of pre-baby home life to dissolve into a hopeless state of ongoing chaos. With a baby in your near future, life as you know it will change, for change is the reality of the day. How successfully parents navigate and manage those changes is dependent on their understanding of the micro and macro needs that all babies share, and, of course, the best way to meet those needs. What's missing? We have counseled many couples that started their journey in parenting with high hopes and the best intentions to love and nurture their newborns, only to see their dreams reduced to a nightmare of survival. Who are these people? They are parents like so many others. The sweet couple you met in your birthing class, the family down the street, or the next-door neighbor with the cute wooden stork on the front lawn wrapped with pink balloons announcing the birth of Alexis. These mothers and fathers are equipped with a long list of baby facts, but they often lack understanding of how all those facts fit together in the big picture of life. While facts can provide a plan, only understanding can provide the purpose. What is understanding, and why is it important? Understanding as a concept of learning is the mechanism that gives meaning and value to facts. It reaches beyond the moment and looks into the future. Parenting with purposeful understanding connects each moment with a day with a week with a month, and a month of doing with a year of accomplishments. Understanding allows parents to find the right course and stay there with a minimal number of course corrections. It is also a prerequisite necessary for making wise and productive decisions. Our goal with this book is to provide new and expectant parents with the type of understanding that yields confidence for mom and dad and an abiding security for their baby. Start here. Building a loving home environment. With 25 years of pediatric and parent coaching experience behind us, along with several million adherents to the BabyWise principles, we have learned a few things about newborns, parents, and parenting philosophies. At the top of the list is this truth. The outcomes common to BabyWise infants are developmental achievements too valuable to be left to chance. They are parent-directed and not child-led. Second, we know that parents naturally and instantly fall in love with their babies. That is the way of parental love. However, falling in love with your baby is not the same thing as providing your baby a loving home environment. A healthy home environment starts with mom and dad's commitment to each other, from which a more perfect love is communicated to their children. Third, a loving home environment is not something that naturally emerges. It takes work and sacrifice, and it requires that both mom and dad be intentional in their love for each other. It also requires parents to gain understanding of the three prevailing influences that shape every child's destiny. The first is his genetic disposition inherited from mom and dad. This speaks to a baby's physical and intellectual potential. The second great influence comes through his temperament, which is that dimension of his personality governing whether he is outgoing, shy, funny, or even keel. The third great influence is the home environment created by mom and dad. While parents cannot change their child's genetic inscription or their child's temperament, they will influence the home environment and thus shape their child's destiny. What defines the home environment? This is where children first learn of love. From whom will they learn it? In part, they will learn from mom and in part from dad, but most persuasively from mom and dad working as a team. This is because a mother and father cannot communicate the total message of love apart from the oneness that was formed in the bonds of their own marriage. Marriage is more than a legal status between two people. It is a living entity that reflects a special bond between a man and a woman. It is a unique relationship, one without parallel. While marriage transcends all other relationships, it is not disconnected from parenting. Just as the human heart pumps oxygen-rich blood to the body, so a healthy marriage fuels all the cells that make parenting come alive. It is truly an amazing relationship. That is why couples with great marriages make great parents, and their children are the benefactors. The marriage factor. The fairy tale conclusion, and they lived happily ever after, assumes happiness is an effortless, spontaneous outcome of marriage. This is far from being true. Men are not born good husbands, nor women good wives. They become that way only through self-sacrifice, patience, and a devotional commitment to the happiness and welfare of the other. It therefore serves a husband and wife to remember that they will not find long-term happiness in marriage, but rather they can achieve it through marriage, which trickles down to their parenting. This means the husband-wife union is not just a good first step towards successful child-rearing, but is in fact a necessary one, one on which your children will come to depend. Although the primary emphasis of this book is nurturing your newborn, we would be remiss in our educational efforts if we failed to explain what turns hope into reality. We believe that if you really love your children, you will give them the gift of love, security, and a sense of belonging that can only be derived from an ongoing demonstration of your love for each other as a husband and wife. It is a love that is rooted in the security of belonging, being complete, and feeling needed as a soulmate, completer of the other. Humans, unlike members of the animal kingdom, possess a particular emotional DNA strand that will not allow the inner person to be truly satisfied with just the physical side of the marriage relationship. That is, in part, what distinguishes us as humans. When a husband and wife are not one with each other in regard to emotional, physical, social oneness, they have gaps in their relationship, which have unintended consequences extending to their children. The impact on children. While a husband or wife might be able to cope with the missing part, children do not fare as well. Babies are not able to rely on reason or intellect to measure the stability of the world around them, so by design, they depend heavily on their senses. There are certain aspects of the marriage relationship that children need to witness routinely. Children need to see an ongoing love relationship that includes mom and dad enjoying each other as friends and not just parents. They also need to see their parents talking, laughing, working together, and resolving conflicts with a mutual respect for each other. We cannot overemphasize this point. The more parents demonstrate love for each other, the more they saturate their child's senses with confidence of a loving, safe, and secure world. That marriage relationship provides children with a layer of love and security that cannot be achieved through the direct parent-child relationship, even during the baby years. When you put all these factors together, they add up to a healthy home environment. The warning. Too often, parents lose sight of the bigger picture, or maybe they never understood it. They get lost in a parenting wonderland of photos, footsteps, and first words. Baby becomes central to their existence, to the exclusion of their own relationship as a husband and wife. That might be a fun diversion for mom and dad for a while, but it is not helpful for baby. The greatest overall influence parents have on their children comes not in their roles as individual parents, but in their shared role as husband and wife. A healthy and vibrant marriage relationship is essential to the emotional health of children, as well as to mom and dad's emotional welfare. When there is harmony in the marriage, there is an infused stability within the family. Even more certain, strong marriages provide a haven of security for children as they mature. That is because healthy, loving marriages create a sense of certainty for children. When a child observes the special friendship and emotional togetherness of his parents, he is naturally more secure because of his confidence in mom and dad's relationship. In contrast, weak marriages do not infuse security into the hearts of children, nor do they encourage strong family ties. In time, parents come to realize that the quality of the parent-child relationship and sibling-to-sibling relationships often reflects the quality of mom and dad's relationship. Think about it. When the marriage relationship is beautiful, what impressionable child would not desire to share in its joy? When two are beautifully one, what child would not seek the comforts of their togetherness? Parents define for their children the meaning of love as much by what happens in their relationship as anything they may do for their children. Healthy parenting flows from healthy marriages. Protect and keep yours safe. Meeting everyone's needs. What do parents need to know to keep their marriages alive and well so they can maximize their parenting influence? Here are a few action principles. 1. Continue living. Life does not stop once the baby arrives. It may slow down for a few weeks, but it should not stop entirely. When a couple becomes a mother and a father, they do not stop being a daughter or a son, a brother or sister or a friend. Relationships important before the baby comes will still be important after the baby arrives. They are worth protecting and keeping. Show hospitality and invite the new grandparents and friends over as soon as life settles down. 2. Date your spouse. If you had a weekly date night before the baby was born, continue that practice as soon as you can after the baby arrives. If you did not have a weekly date night, now might be a good time to start. It does not have to be an expensive or late evening, but keeping your marriage fresh is the starting point of keeping your entire family emotionally healthy. Number 3. Continue those loving gestures that were enjoyed before the baby came along. If there was a special activity that you enjoyed previously, you should plan it into your schedule. If dad brings home a gift for baby, how about one for mom as well? The idea here is basic. The loving gestures that mark the marriage relationship as special before the baby came need to be kept special throughout the parenting years. Number 4. Practice couch time. At the end of each workday, spend at least 15 minutes sitting with your spouse discussing the day's events. This simple gesture provides children a tangible sense of their parents' togetherness and fulfills one of their greatest emotional needs, the need to know of mom and dad's strong love for each other. When children sense harmony in the marriage relationship, there is an infused stability that spreads throughout the entire home. Here are some suggestions that can help promote and protect couch time. Try to have it every Monday through Friday and select a time that will allow you to be relatively consistent. Treat this time like a non-negotiable appointment with the least amount of interruptions. That means the answering machine picks up the phone calls and your mobile goes on silent mode. Over time, as your baby grows, set aside a box of toys for him to play with while mom and dad are having their time together. Making your marriage a priority by keeping a visual demonstration of your love for each other in the forefront of your parenting is a love gift your children intuitively understand, appreciate, and find security in. Number 5. Know what to expect of each other before your baby arrives. For new parents, those first several days at home with a new baby are the most difficult, simply because everything is new and unfolding. Every couple seems to naturally find their groove of family responsibility before the baby arrives, but what about after? If this is your first child, you have yet to hear the various little sounds that your baby will make or experience how his cry will impact your postpartum emotions. Add these factors to the feeding and sleep challenges, and you will quickly discover just how stressful the first few weeks can be. To help minimize the stress a baby can bring into a normal home, parents should take the time to work through their expectations of each other before their baby is born. Each person should know what household activity or chore he or she will be responsible for, who will take care of the laundry and meals, shopping, vacuuming, furniture dusting, and who will get up to get the baby for the middle of the night feeding. This may seem like an insignificant to-do list right now, but we assure you, these common household chores are not so insignificant after the baby arrives. Take some time and listen to the who will do what list coming up. Write down the things that represent dad's duties and those belonging to mom. Keep in mind there will be visiting relatives, so a fair price of admission to see the baby is helping around the house. The who will do what list. Household responsibilities. Wash laundry, mom or dad? Fold laundry. Put away laundry. Ironing. Dry cleaning drop-off, dry cleaning pick-up, grocery shopping, put away groceries, prepare meals, breakfast, lunch, dinner, wash dishes, load dishwasher, general home care, clean bathrooms, vacuum, dust, make bed, change bed linens, water plants, take out trash, recycling, laundry, feed pet. Clean up after pet. Walk the dog. Yard work. Get the mail. Pay the bills. Banking. Vehicle maintenance, service. Now list any other household responsibilities you'd like to delineate. Baby care responsibilities. Send baby announcements, mom or dad. Write thank you notes. Feed baby if bottle fed. Diaper changes. Get baby at night for feeding. Night feeding if bottle fed. Bathe the baby. Comfort baby at fussy times. Care for other children. And now write down any other baby care responsibilities you'd like to delineate. A word to the single parent. Throughout life, we face unexpected challenges that detract from the ideal. In the home environment, the ideal is to operate as a parent from the strength of your marriage. We realize that ideal is not present in every home. The death of a spouse, a divorce, or an unplanned pregnancy can cause our dreams to disappear under a cloud of discouragement. Having worked with single parents for over a quarter century, we understand the pressures and challenges of their life. A single parent faces double duty with the care and responsibility of rearing a baby, while often wearing several hats as homemaker, provider, and parent. Yet, we also know that if you are a single parent, you will love your baby with the same passion as any couple, and will desire to give your baby the best chance in life. It is our joy to help all parents maximize their emotional and intellectual resources, regardless of their marital status. If you are a single parent, please know that while you may feel out of place in various group settings, when it comes to caring for your children, you are always welcome in our community. Summary. In parenting, everything is connected. The beginning with the end and everything in between. That means parents never act in any given moment without their actions having some impact on the future. That is true not just in the role of a mom or a dad, but also as a wife or husband. As we will demonstrate in our next chapter, parenting decisions have ripple effects that connect our beliefs and assumptions with our actions, and our actions with outcomes. Keeping your marriage strong has positive consequences. Parent from the strength of your marriage, and you will parent well. If you're interested in additional resources to strengthen your marriage, please visit our online resource center at www.babywise.life. Chapter 2. Feeding Philosophies. One day, sitting by a peaceful pond, I found myself amused by three children, their tiny feet scampering back and forth as they pursued the perfect skipping stone. Who as a child has not, at one time or another, tried to skip a stone across the smooth surface of a lake, or dropped a pebble in a pool of water, and then watched as perfect concentric circles expanded outward from the center? The weight of the pebble breaking the surface creates energy that causes an expansion of ripples, but the initial source that brought this energy to life was the decision to drop the pebble into the water in the first place. There is a parenting principle tied to this metaphor. Every decision made and every action taken as a result of our personal beliefs and assumptions sets in motion rippling effects of corresponding outcomes. Those outcomes are tied to the nature of our beliefs. Our actions affect not only the seen, but also the unseen, often producing unintended consequences. The stone hitting the water, for example, could scare baby turtles floating near the surface, driving them into deep water, possibly toward a predator. The sound of the splash might startle some water birds and cause them to take flight, leaving behind a familiar habitat that provides food and safety. If these collateral actions take place, they are all connected back to us because of a single momentary decision to throw a pebble in the first place. Ripple effects of feeding. You would think that establishing good feeding habits would be the easiest part of infant care, since a newborn's drive to satisfy hunger is one of the strongest in life. On the surface, it all sounds fairly simple. Baby is hungry, so you feed him. What more do you need to know? Unfortunately, it is not that clear-cut. When it comes to babies, the ripple effect principle is clearly evident in something as basic as how and when to feed a baby. As we will demonstrate in this and other chapters, the feeding philosophy a mother and father decide to implement will produce an ever-expanding series of ripples that impact every aspect of a baby's life. Every parenting philosophy has its own pathology and will take parents in different directions and to different outcomes. Every feeding philosophy brings with it a different set of parenting priorities and opinions about what is best for a baby, although there is no consensus about what best means or how it is achieved. That is because each parenting priority is driven by larger worldviews and beliefs about children, their origin, nature, and basic needs. Different priorities inevitably lead parents to different strategies of care and, correspondingly, to different outcomes. Unfortunately, as the goals and priorities of each philosophy are presented, they all sound noble and persuasive, but the outcomes are not equal. The more parents understand each feeding philosophy, the better prepared they will be to make an informed decision for their baby's benefit. Let's examine the three most prominent feeding philosophies in our society and find out what they can teach us about today's parenting theories. The evolution of feeding philosophies. Prior to the rise of early childhood theories in the 20th century, common sense guided parents with sound thinking, producing predictable outcomes. Mothers nursed their babies based on hunger cues, but also in sync with mom's daily household duties. Routine was very much part of her day, and routine feedings were part of her baby's life. Today, there is not only a variety of feeding philosophies for parents to navigate through, but each philosophy has its own lingo. For example, during pregnancy, you may have been encouraged to demand feed your baby, or warned not to follow a schedule, especially if you intend to breastfeed. Maybe you heard about a demand schedule or a self-regulating schedule. Perhaps you are encouraged to consider natural feeding while avoiding hyperscheduling. Of course, hyperscheduling is rigid, and rigid feeding is not as good as cry feeding, but the latter is less desirable than cue feeding, which is similar to responsive feeding. And last but not least is bottle feeding. Where in the world does this fit in? Let's see if we can make some sense of all these titles by stepping back to the last century and examining the origin of today's feeding philosophies. Philosophy of behaviorism, clock feeding. While the 19th century witnessed a surge in child development theories, it was not until the 20th century that two competing schools of thought captured the public's attention. The first was the behavioral school, emerging in the early 1900s. Behaviorists emphasized environmental stimuli as the primary influence on human behavior. At the same time, they downplayed the influence on internal factors such as emotions, human will, and human nature. They believed that if you could control the environmental influences, you could engineer the perfect child. Behaviorism received an unintentional boost with the growing women's movement of the 1920s, which was symbolized by short hair, short skirts, contraceptives, cigarettes, and bottle feeding, replacing breastfeeding. The latter became possible because of the discovery of an algebraic equation called baby formula. Since formula could be offered any time, a new feeding practice emerged called schedule feeding, or clock feeding. A regimented feeding schedule of every 4 hours was considered to be in the best interest of the child, and every good mother was expected to follow it to the minute. The baby who showed signs of hunger sooner than 4 hours was left to cry it out, because the clock, not the baby, determined when feedings occurred, with little regard to the baby's immediate needs or the parent's natural inclination to intervene. The philosophy of neoprimitivism, child-led feeding. By the mid-1940s, a second theory, an adaptation of Sigmund Freud's views, started to nudge the rigidity of behaviorism from center stage. A small group of Freud's 20th century followers put forth the idea that children are born psychologically damaged as a result of the birthing process. Working within the void of limited science of the day, it was speculated that labor and delivery was so traumatizing to the unborn child that birthing became the wellspring of all future mental imbalances and insecurities. Otto Rank was the Australian psychoanalyst credited as the first champion of the birth trauma view, 1929. While his theory did not catch on right away, it eventually inspired the neo-primitivistic school of child development, supported by Ribble, 1944, Aldridge, 1945, Frank, 1945, and Trainum, Palafian, and Kraft, 1945. The title neo-primitivistic is not name-calling, but reflects a specific school of thought that postulates that the separation at birth disrupts the in-utero relational harmony between mother and child. Therefore, the primary goal of early parenting is to re-establish or reattach the baby, emotionally speaking. The theory works from a bizarre twofold assumption that babies in the womb have a perfect emotional relationship with their mothers, but lose emotional attachment during the birthing process. This leads to a second assumption, that every newborn has a lingering, subconscious desire to return to the security of his mother's womb. Since that cannot happen physically, the mother is to create and mimic an artificial womb-like environment and maintain it long after birth. All of her efforts are aimed at reversing the psychic shock brought on by the trauma of birth. From this theory came very specific reattachment protocols. The process of reattaching the baby emotionally requires the day and night presence and availability of the mother, who is urged to return to a primitive style of nurturing. The baby should be endlessly cradled, sleep with the mother, be breastfed well into the second or third year. The child is to be the center of the family universe, where all practices minister to his comfort and minimize his anxiety. By 1949, the birth trauma theory, lacking objective verifiable data, was dismissed with considerable skepticism. Around the same time, the school of behaviorism, while still strong, was beginning to lose influence, in part due to an up-and-coming pediatrician whose first book sold 50 million copies in the span of his life. His name was Dr. Benjamin Spock. His book was Baby and Child Care. By today's standards, Dr. Spock was a centrist and best known for advocating common-sense parenting, while stressing that babies are individuals better served with a flexible routine than a fixed schedule. He rejected behavioristic one-size-fits-all dictates on everything from strict feeding schedules to potty training, but also dismissed the child-centered extremes of neoprimitivism, which rejected all aspects of structure and routine. By the 1980s, however, Dr. Spock's centrist influence began to erode because of social conservatives who thought his views were too permissive, and social liberals who declared his parenting advice too controlling. With the polarization of Spock's views and the decline of his popularity, there came a resurgence of the birth trauma theory. While the foundational tenets of the 1940 birth trauma theory did not change, the modern version took on a new name. Today, it is referred to as attachment parenting, which in truth has very little connection to the theories of infant attachment. They are linked in name only, not by science. It is important to note the distinctions here. The theory of infant attachment is the accepted belief that physical touch is a significant necessity of survival. As authors, we believe that human touch is a baby's first language, communicating love and security through the portal of the senses. Touch is as important as proper nutrition, and the lack of either will lead to failure to thrive. Parents should minister to the actual needs and vulnerabilities of their babies. However, they should be cautious of any parenting theory that creates extreme or false vulnerabilities. That is when healthy protection turns to unhealthy overprotection, to the long-term detriment of the child. Attachment parenting advocates of the 1980s may have hijacked the name, but they substituted an old, discarded theory for the actual science behind true infant-parent attachment. Regardless of what it is called today, attachment parenting or reattachment parenting, it is still the same philosophy, drawn from the same birth trauma beliefs and assumptions originally offered by Otto Rank, 1929, and expanded on by Dr. Ribble, 1944. Just as it was in the past, the modern protocols for attachment parenting continue to be very labor-intensive, with a strong emphasis on mothers mimicking the womb, first by keeping her baby in her day and night presence, the sling by day and co-sleeping with her by night, and second, through the constant and continual nursing, which becomes the substitute umbilical cord. This is why adherents to attachment parenting elevate nursing beyond the nutritive value of breast milk. It is also why a mother can never breastfeed too much, too long, or too often, but only too little. Even if it is the third feeding in 30 minutes, the attachment parenting mom is acting on the fearful assumption that every cry, if not a signal of hunger, is a potential sign of attachment failure. It all becomes a vicious cycle. Sad to say, the recommended attachment parenting protocols required to manufacture a secure, attached child too often produce the opposite: an emotionally stressed, high-need, insecure baby and one tired mom. Creating the boogeyman. After more than 60 years of speculation behind the theory, there has been no conclusive evidence provided or a convincing body of research offered that supports the birth trauma premise on which the modern attachment parenting philosophy is based. Meanwhile, the science refuting it continues to grow, especially in light of one fact of nature. There is no life form on Earth, simple or complex, human or animal, in which the offspring spontaneously seeks to retreat to the past in search of an old attachment. Unfortunately, as long as the birthing process is marketed as a boogeyman that inflicts trauma on helpless babies, the attachment parenting remedy will always have willful adherents. However, is the room really a paradise to which the newborn seeks to return? In order to justify the extreme tenets of attachment parenting in this modern age of science, proponents continue to present to new and unsuspecting parents the birthing process in horrific, distressing language. They assign to the helpless infant feelings of parental abandonment and betrayal that must be overcome if true attachment is to take place. In the scientific world, this is known as apophenia, attempting to make a connection where no connections exist. A baby, they say, is born fully conscious of a traumatic upheaval brought on during birthing in which he is forcibly thrust from the warmth, protection, and security of the womb, totally exposed to a new world. In this new world, he must exert effort to obtain food, draw his own breath, and gasp, cough, and struggle to survive. Really? Does the birthing process actually do all that? How about a more accurate, rational, life-giving perspective that acknowledges that it is only because of the birthing process that a baby is truly liberated from a condition of incredible restraint? A baby in the womb is unable to express himself or communicate even the most basic needs. He lived in a world of darkness, in a confined sack where the nutrients that supported life began to mix with his body fluids. It was a place where touch was not permitted, nor was there the opportunity to hear the voices of love, care, and protection. A baby is saved only by the miracle and beauty of the birthing process that truly delivers him from bondage to freedom, where he can participate in the wide range of human sensations. For the first time, he is able to experience the touch of a loving mother and father and to hear the sounds of their voices, as well as the beauty of the songbird. He is able to experience 1,000 different rays of color carried on light beams that the womb prevented him from seeing previously. He is free to laugh, move freely, and discover a world previously closed off to him. All this is made possible by the single passageway carried on the wings of the birthing process. If birth is actually a moment to remember, then it is a moment to celebrate, not one to return to restraint and bondage. Finally, if trauma is attached to the memory of birthing, by what neurological function is this achieved? Here is a fact to consider. Newborns have zero memory of birth, let alone the ability to recall anxiety that is specific to that experience. Neuronal development and memory function depend on the brain receiving highly oxygenated blood, which comes from breathing. Breathing cannot begin until the lungs inflate, which occurs after, not during, the birth process. Higher brain centers that control memory are still developing at the time of birth and afterwards. Thus, where do the facts lead? While behaviorists emphasize outward structure and not the inner person, the neoprimitivists emphasize the inner person at the expense of outward structure. We believe both approaches are extreme and detrimental to healthy parenting outcomes. There is a better way. It is found in the center. The baby-wise alternative. Parent-directed feeding. While some mothers thrive emotionally on attachment-style parenting, that is not the case for most women. A more user-friendly, less fatiguing methodology is called parent-directed feeding, PDF. PDF is an infant management strategy that helps mothers to connect with their babies and babies to connect with everyone in the family. PDF is the center point between hyperscheduling and the reattachment theories. It has enough structure to bring security and order to a baby's world, yet enough flexibility to give mom the freedom to respond to any need at any time. It is a proactive style of parenting that helps foster healthy growth and optimal development. If, for example, a baby cannot maximize learning without experiencing optimal alertness, and he can only experience optimal alertness with optimal sleep. Optimal sleep is tied to good naps and established nighttime sleep. These advanced levels of sleep are the end result of consistent feedings. Consistent feedings come from establishing a healthy routine. PDF is the pebble that creates the ripple effect leading to all these outcomes, including true parent-child attachment. Embedded in the parent-directed strategy is a critical element for all aspects of infant care: parental assessment, an acquired confidence to think, evaluate, and intuitively learn what a baby needs and how to meet specific needs at specific times. What are the advantages of the parent-directed approach? The following comparative analysis of the three common feeding philosophies answers that question and more. Comparative analysis of feeding philosophies. The three prominent feeding philosophies include child-led feeding, also known as cue feeding, demand feeding, response feeding, ad-lib, and self-regulating feeding. Clock feeding, also known as fixed scheduling. Baby-wise parent-directed feeding, PDF. Theories in practice. Child-led feeding. Feeding times are guided strictly by a single variable: the presence of a baby's hunger cues, sucking sounds, hands moving toward mouth, slight whimpering or crying. The hunger cue is considered a variable because feeding times are random and unpredictable. For example, 3 hours may pass between feedings, then 1 hour, followed by 20 minutes, then 4 hours. It might also be clusters of feeding, such as 5 short nursing periods in 3 hours, followed by a long stretch of no feedings. Either way, the time between feedings is not considered important because the theory insists that parents submit to any cue that looks like hunger, regardless of the lapse of time. Clock feeding. Feeding times are guided strictly by the constant of time as measured by the clock. The clock determines when and how often a baby is fed, usually on fixed intervals of time. Looking for hunger cues is not considered important since feeding times are always predictable. The clock thinks for the parent and the baby, and the parent's role is to be submissive to the clock. Parent-directed feeding. Both the variable of the hunger cue and the constant of time are viewed as necessary tools of assessment. The conflict between the variable and constant. The greatest tension with feeding philosophies centers on which feeding indicator to use, the variable of the hunger cue or the constant of the clock. The standard attachment parenting, La Leche League doctrine, insists on child-led feedings exclusively. Therefore, the hunger cue is always dominant. Parents who believe in hyperscheduling see the fixed segments of time as the final determinant of feeding. Thus, the clock is dominant. The weakness in logic of these two views becomes obvious when placed into their respective equations. The child-led equation looks like this. Hunger cue plus nothing equals feeding time. Plus nothing in this equation means there are no other factors considered that determine when the baby is fed except the hunger or crying cues of the infant. While this seems to initially make sense, there are some concerns related to this particular approach to infant care. Weakness in practice. Number one, child-led feeding is based on the faulty assumption that the hunger cue is always reliable. It is not, and that is the primary reason this approach is dangerous. Being guided by the hunger cue only works if a hunger cue, such as crying, is present. Weak, sickly, sluggish, or sleepy babies may not signal for food for 4, 5, or 6 hours. Thus, this type of feeding puts the baby at risk of not receiving proper nourishment. If cue is not present, her baby does not get fed. Number two, exclusive cue response feeding can easily lead to infant dehydration, low weight gain, failure to thrive, and frustration for both baby and mom. Number three, if the hunger cue is consistently less than 2 hours, it leads to maternal fatigue. Fatigue is recognized as the number one reason mothers give up breastfeeding. They are exhausted. Number four, the erratic nature of cluster feeding produces unintended consequences, including excessive fussiness, erratic napping behavior, and instability in sleep-wake cycles, all contributing to infant sleep deprivation. The clock feeding equation looks like this. Clock plus nothing equals feeding time. Plus nothing in this equation means nothing but the clock determines when a baby is to be fed. Weakness in practice. Feeding based on fixed times ignores legitimate hunger cues by assuming each previous feeding was successful. It does not take into account growth spurts, which necessitate a day or more of increased feedings. The baby who shows signs of hunger after 2 hours is put off until the next scheduled feeding, and that extra hour usually comes with crying that could have been avoided. Number two, strict schedules may not promote sufficient stimulation for breast milk production, leading to the second greatest cause for mothers giving up on breastfeeding, low milk supply. With both child-led feeding and clock feeding, a tension exists between the variable and the constant. This tension is both philosophical and physiological. In either case, as parents are trying to serve their underlying parenting philosophy, they become enslaved to a method. To accept either of these feeding indicators as an exclusive guide to feeding is to ensure a stress-filled and perhaps unhealthy infant. The baby-wise philosophy of parent-directed feeding. PDF eliminates the tension of relying exclusively on the unreliable variable of a hunger cue or the insufficient constant of the clock. With PDF, both the variable and the constant are used as companions, backups to each other, not antagonists to be avoided. Consider the PDF equation with the inclusion of parental assessment, PA. Hunger cue plus clock plus PA equals feeding time. With the parent-directed approach, you feed your baby when he is hungry, but the clock provides the protective limits so you are not feeding too often, such as every hour, or too little, such as every 4 to 5 hours. PDF brings into play the critical tool of parental assessment, which is the ability to assess a baby's needs and respond accordingly. Parental assessment frees a mother to use the variable of the hunger cue when necessary and the constant of time when appropriate. Here are some of the benefits of the PDF approach. Number one, PDF guided by parental assessment provides tools to recognize and assess two potential problems with infant feeding. A, the breastfed child who feeds often, such as every hour, may not be receiving adequate nutrition. Using parental assessment, parents not only respond to the cue by feeding the baby, but are alerted to a potential problem with the feedings. B, when the hunger cue is not present, the clock serves as a guide to ensure that too much or too little time does not elapse between feedings. It is also a protective backup for a weak and sickly baby who may not be able to cry effectively. Number two, when the hunger cue is present, the clock is submissive to the cue because hunger, not the clock, determines feedings. When parental assessment is part of the equation, parents are protected from moving to the extremes of feeding. PDF and infant attachment. Beyond the assessment tools, the baby-wise principles also facilitate parent-child attachment. This is achieved by creating an orderly environment where growth and development are optimized. The fact that a baby's biological and neurological needs are rhythmically merging with baby's natural capacities means nothing is hindering the upward progress toward comprehensive attachment. Comprehensive refers to the